The House Committee on Revenue for Thursday, April 23rd, 2009 will come to order. Colleagues, this morning we have public hearings set on a variety of bills relating to corporate taxation, and we're going to open them together and ask those who are here to comment on the subject of the corporate taxation, and of course on any of particular of these bills that they so choose. So we'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2913, House Bill 2119, House Bill 3049, House Bill 3405. Did I get the numbers right? Okay, good. Open those hearings. Chris will give us a quick overview of the bills, and then we'll hear from the Governor's office.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. In your packet, along with the copies of the bills, you have one of the summary tables entitled Corporate Minimum Tax, and listing those four bills. So just hitting the highlights of those bills in terms of their minimum tax structure. A couple of the bills have some other policies embedded in them, but the table here just focuses on the taxation piece of it. And so very quickly, 2119, you've heard a few weeks ago, that creates a graduated minimum tax based on Oregon sales. And depending on the level of Oregon sales, the minimum tax ranges from $25 to $5,000. The effective date is January 1st, 2009, and raises a preliminary estimate for the annual average revenue impact is in about $37 million. 2913 creates, the focus there is on taxable income, and it creates a graduated marginal rate tax rate structure comparable to the rate structure on the personal income tax side. That's the 5, 7, and 9 rate structure. And that's effective for tax years 2009 through 2012 and has an annual revenue impact estimate of $120 million. House Bill 3049 is a flat fee of $300, and the way the bill is currently drafted, it applies to both S corporations and C corporations, has an effective date of January 1, 2010, and raises an estimate of $25 million. Most of that money is coming from the S corps. The C corp piece, which is more comparable to the other plans, which only affect C corporations, is about $7 million a year. House Bill 3405 is probably the bill that contains the most extensive other policies, but the corporate minimum tax piece there is another variation on a graduated minimum tax based on Oregon sales. It's a five bracket structure, if you will, where the tax ranges from $100 to $7,500 depending on Oregon sales, and the brackets are on that table. The estimated annual revenue impact of that one is about $21 million, and it has an effective date of January 1, 2010.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you. Mr. Nesbitt. Thank you for being here this morning. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Tim Nesbitt, Deputy Chief of Staff for the Governor, and here to present House Bill 2119, which I would like to say is a work in progress. This bill was drafted before the December revenue forecast, and by the time the Governor put together his final budget that came to you as the Governor's recommended budget for 09-11, he had decided the best use of the corporate minimum would be for general fund purposes, in particular, as he had proposed in 2007 for financing the Oregon Opportunity Grant. So the bill, which started out as a proposal to direct the revenues from a higher corporate minimum to the Rainy Day Fund, an idea discussed in the Revenue Task Force, has already been changed in practice in the Governor's budget. It's one thing to keep in mind. Secondly, the goal here, though, as it is with many of the other bills you're considering, is to update the 80-year-old corporate minimum tax. I think it was established in 1929 and changed from $25 to $10 in 1931, and to do so not just on an inflation-adjusted basis or by coming up with one fixed rate for all corporations, but to come up with a reasonable amount that reflects the size of a business, and in this case, it's operations in Oregon, which is why you see the sales measure. This is the same as the governor proposed in 2007. I would say, given the changing circumstances with your budget and all the work that's going into this issue of a corporate minimum, the goal remains the same, but the proposal is an opening bid, and we're happy to be responsive to whatever other ideas come forward.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Nesbitt? I would note that for a multi-state corporation, this isn't exactly an apportionment bill, is it? It relates solely to what Oregon sales are.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
John Chandler, John Marshall, Tim Gallagher.
Mr. Chair, if they're going to talk about 3029, I'll go with them.
3049, yes.
3049.
Oh, okay.
It's my bill. And let me.
You want to talk about it?
Yeah.
Let's let Representative Berger go first.
You can sit with me. I don't mind.
apparently they do.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Vicki Berger, State Representative, District 20. 3049 is not what I thought it was going to be. We all go through the campaign process every 2 years, and we need in some way and measure to respond to what we hear. And this is an attempt on my part during the campaign. One of the issues that came up repeatedly was, why do we still have that stupid $10 that was set in 1931 for corporations that aren't making any money, which people don't really understand. There's a sort of an unfair consensus that that's all corporations pay in this state is the $10 as a result of some of the media around it. But it seemed to me that at the very least I needed to introduce legislation that brought this up into the real world of today. So my intention on this bill, which it was explained to me this morning, I did not get to. It was to impact only C corporations and to bring the $10 minimum up to a comparable amount in today's world, which is $300. So it's a pretty simple bill, and it talks about making that minimum mean something in today's world. People, it's called a tax. It's treated as a tax. It's actually more or less a fee that you pay in this state, and I think in recognition of that, it seemed reasonable to me to say, okay, what would that be to as a C corporation be to do business in the state of Oregon today on a comparable amount, and that's the $300. I did not intend to bring S corporations into it, but Chris has pointed out the way that the bill is written, it does, and so it gets to a $25 million, but he... positive revenue, he is correct, it would be something $7-8 million positive revenue impact if you narrowed it as I intended, which was C corporations only. The difference, of course, is I was in business as an S corporation, didn't make any money for a lot of years, but hired employees and kept my business going, and $300 is a lot for a small, struggling local businesses to be the minimum. So I intended it for C-Corps only. That being said, there are a lot of C-Corps that also struggle, but they have a different corporate structure. And so that is my proposal, and I'll let these other folks speak further. I'll entertain questions if you like.
Thank you. Any questions for Representative Berger? Thank you, ma'am. We appreciate it. Now, gentlemen.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. John Marshall representing Associated Oregon Industries, and I guess I drew the short straw and get to go first. The discussion of the corporate minimum, I think we ought to narrow it down to what we're really talking about, and that is a tax increase on businesses that aren't making any money. I repeat, a tax increase on businesses that aren't making any money. In a period of a severe global recession and at a time of record unemployment. In case you haven't had a chance to look at the latest job report from the Employment Department, it says that five of Oregon's seven largest private sector industries have suffered substantial job declines. And some of the words used, it's like the author of this report had to come up with different ways of saying drops, declines. For example, trade, transportation, and utilities declined rapidly since July of 2008. Retail trade continued to shrink. Transportation, warehousing, utilities hit hard by the downturn. Manufacturing has dropped at a rapid pace. Wood products, fabricated metal, computer and electronic products all down. Construction losses steepened. Substantial losses in non-residential building construction. Professional and business services continued to trend downward. Leisure and hospitality accelerated its unemployment decline. Education and health service showing signs of weakness after years of growth. It talks about Oregon's unemployment rate as the highest since 1947 when Unemployment Department started publishing its unemployment rates. So that's sort of the environment that the business community is operating in. Obviously, the key to Oregon's economic recovery is to reverse this downward spiral, and that is to get Oregonians back to work, earning incomes, and paying the taxes to support the public services that we in the business community, and I'm sure all of you, value. To the minimum tax issue, we spent the last year convening other business organizations and individual business leaders to try to look at this issue. We looked at all kinds of options, flat rates based on gross receipts, graduated flat rates similar to the rates and brackets similar to the personal income tax, value-added or business activity approaches, which I affectionately refer to as the VAT-BAP. And each of those has advantages or disadvantages over one type of business versus the other. That is, you punish a high-volume, low-margin business, or you tax components of a business activity that we ought to be encouraging: wages, benefits, dividends, employees. We don't believe that the corporate minimum was ever intended to be a proxy for some kind of a privilege tax. We believe it was intended as a minimum administrative or a filing fee for those businesses that, under the creation of the corporate income tax, didn't pay anything because they didn't earn any income. When you look at the data, and you've all seen this, the structure of Oregon corporations is changing. In 1990, 66% of corporate tax returns were C-Corps. In 2006, 38% were C-Corps. So the number of C-Corps is dropping, the number of S-Corps is increasing, and as you know, S-Corps pay their taxes at a higher rate than the corporate income tax through the personal income tax. If you look at general fund revenue for the next biennium, as stated in the March 09 revenue forecast, 94% of that general fund income tax revenue will come from the personal income tax, 6% from the corporate income tax. Now, there are those that suggest that that share ought to grow. Well, even if you doubled the share of the corporate income tax, portion of that general fund revenue, that general fund income tax revenue, or tripled it, the name of the game is still going to be the personal income tax. And the personal income tax is going to be paid by individuals who are working and earning and paying taxes. So the issue is still jobs, more jobs and better jobs. So maybe we ought to change the focus of thinking of how to make corporations pay for their presence, and start to recognize and appreciate how much the corporation's presence in Oregon pays in terms of jobs, income, and taxes that support the public services we all value. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Tom Gallagher, here representing a number of clients, and the Portland Business Alliance, Schnitzer Steel, Oregon Auto Dealers among them, those three basically today. I want to make a couple of general points and then go into a couple of specifics about how many of the revenue bills you're dealing with impact industries I represent. The first thing I want to say is I've sat through this committee and watched the actions in this committee, and there's a lot of talk about revenue reform and tax reform. And I also followed the interim task force on revenue, and PBA especially participated in that and supports the results of that task force. I don't see this committee or this legislature moving forward on many pieces of those recommendations, but I do see them moving forward on what they consider to be reform of the business tax side. I think they all belong together, and I'll give you some specifics of that as we go along. Secondly, I want to quote David Bragdon, the chair of Metro, who a couple of years ago, and I think in an off-the-cuff response and a remark in an interview, made a statement that I've kind of written down as one of those truisms. They asked him about quality of life in the metropolitan area, and I'm probably misquoting him, but the content is accurate. He said where he comes from, quality of life begins with a job. And that's what businesses in Oregon provide. I will use an example here of the Oregon Auto Dealers, and we did an economic survey of our folks at the end of last year, which was the first of what now is a continuing series of disastrous years for the auto industry. And let me apply some of the numbers I'm going to give you to the alternative minimum gross receipts tax formula. The average sales of a new dealership in Oregon last year, in the first start of this downturn, was $29 million. That's gross receipts of $29 million. Under most of the formulas I've seen, they would be paying the maximum rate under the gross receipts alternative formula tax. When you have a business like the Oregon Auto Dealers right now that are turning no profit, there's two places they can cut. And you watch in the paper, you'll see that some of them are actually selling off dealerships. They're not reinvesting their capital. They're taking their capital back out of the system. And the other is employees. If you raise somebody's business and they're not making any money and they have to pay a $25 or higher $1,000 check, the only place they have to pay that check from is by taking it out of operating expenses. And unfortunately, most of the time in these dealerships, you take it out of jobs. The average annual earnings last year of employees working for an Oregon auto dealership was $47,300. That's an above-average job for this state. So when you start laying off people in that industry, you affect the overall economy. Another thing to add here is on the business activity tax. I understand the business activity tax and how it works. And I think structuring a business activity tax that take into consideration all the different kinds of business in Oregon would take quite a while. Just running a rough formula across the board and saying you'll pay this percentage and so forth doesn't really take, you know, whatever formula you come up with, it's going to affect one business differently than another because businesses have different operations. Some have large employees. Some have large numbers of inventory. Some have large cash flow. Some have small margins. Some have large margins. Whatever formula you come up with, and there are some that are better than others, you are still going to have winners and losers in the tax situation. And winners and losers in this economy means you are going to raise revenues on many, many businesses that are not making money, that are actually borrowing money to stay afloat right now. And I think you heard Brett DeHart here earlier this session, who I just marvel in the couple of years that I've heard him come in and make testimony as to how real he makes these business decisions for small businesses. The last general point I want to make is on the budget hole that this legislature is going to face and face seriously after May 15. There's not enough revenue in business taxation to make much of a dent in that hole. The way you're going to have to fill that hole, in my experience, and I was here in 81-82. In 81-82, after a number of special sessions, what essentially resulted was a corporate and individual income tax surcharge. That's the only thing in taxing people who had money, who still had jobs, taxing businesses who were still making money. That's the only way you could raise enough money to offset the severe cuts in programs that we were going through in 81 and 82. In 81 and 82, I was running the state's largest public employee organization, we were actively involved in both supporting that increase and in freezing the wages of state employees. The last thing I want to say is for Portland Business Alliance is that we have come up with a set of what we consider to be good business principles, and we have not, like some of the other associations, put those out yet. We're kind of waiting to see how this goes. But a preview to that says that we believe first you have to start looking at both the revenue side and the budget side, and those budget reform proposals that came out of the Revenue Task Force are key to us for any kind of a package you put together to solve this budget crisis. That if you do a corporate minimum, whatever that is, and it's become a euphemism for a way to raise revenue. It's no longer a $10 faux pas in the statute. It's an alternative tax mechanism now, whether you use the gross receipts or the business activity tax. Whatever you do there has to recognize that it is simply a payment from a company that's not making money. It may be a company that's using their tax credits in other ways, and I actually sat through some of your tax credit debates. Lumping tax credits over into hoarding money is not quite the same thing. If you do taxes on business to help you with the recession, they should be temporary. The tax reform issues are going to go forward in the future. They shouldn't be done piece by piece. They should be done as a system-wide change. There are a number of other principles that we have when we come out publicly with this statement, but I think those are the three that apply to today's bills. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. John Chandler, Oregon Home Builders Association. On the specific bill in front of you, the corporate minimum tax increase of $300, the reason we support that is because, for as already been stated and by Representative Berger as well, the minimum corporate tax on C corporations in Oregon historically has been a form of filing fee, a processing fee, whatever you want to call it. It was never intended to be a revenue generator. Had it been inflation adjusted over the years, as Representative Berger indicated, to be about $300 now, that's a fine place to land it. Please do not turn it into a revenue generating mechanism, because that was never his intent, and frankly, for reasons I'll get into here in a minute and you've already heard about, has dramatically unfair effects on businesses. It's important to keep in mind that any company, any C corporation in Oregon that pays the $10 minimum or will pay the $300 minimum should this bill be adopted, did so by following the laws that this body enacted. They did not cheat the state of Oregon. They did not scam the citizenry. They followed the law. Had they not done so, it would have created professional liability issues for their accountants and lawyers. If you don't like the outcome of the equations that's on the books, change the equation, and you've had hearings that would help you do that. Don't grumble and complain about the fact that when people follow that equation, they get a certain answer. If you inflation adjust, put the market back to three where it should have been had we just done it over time, you're then still maintaining the corporate minimum tax as what it has been historically, a form of filing or processing fee. You're not treating it as part of the tax reform discussion. That's, I believe, and I submit to you, is the appropriate way to treat it. Having said that, that doesn't mean that businesses generally, C corporations or otherwise, are oblivious to the state's tax problems. We understand that corporate minimum is a piece of a much, much larger discussion, and frankly, probably taking on more weight than it ought to. There's going to be discussions about revenue. There's going to be discussions about cuts. Those are ahead of us. We understand that we very likely will be asked to pay more taxes as business entities. That's a separate discussion entirely, and we're not here today to say, yes, we agree or no, we disagree, but simply on this issue in front of you, the corporate minimum tax, of treating it as a separate item. Changing tax rules in the middle of a recession is problematic, has already been stated. We'd recommend you not do that. Oregon is an income tax-driven state at the moment. Now, there's all sorts of good ideas out there for how to change that, what those changes might look like, but for the moment, we're an income tax-driven state. As such, we should probably continue, given this crisis and the time imperative that the crisis creates, should stay within that income tax model. As Mr. Marshall indicated, that calls out for job creation activities, but more importantly, it calls out for stability in the tax system for businesses that do the hiring and create those jobs so they don't have to spend valuable resources that they don't have that many of trying to adjust to a new tax system. I served on the Revenue Restructuring Task Force, along with Representative Barnhart and several other members. I'm frankly a little disgruntled that we're not talking about those recommendations more. I think we did very good work during the interim. There's a lot of good content in the recommendations of that task force to guide Oregon into a different approach towards business and personal taxation. That, I would submit, is a conversation for another time after we've put the fire out in the House right now. I think we have a lot to talk about in terms of how we raise money in this state. At the state level, the local level, there was hearings yesterday in the Senate Revenue Committee on three possible ballot measures to change the property tax system. We testified in favor of doing something there as well. We understand the revenue needs of the state. We understand what that revenue goes for, and we're not supportful of doing anything to hamper the state's ability to provide public services. We're simply here this morning saying, please do so with regard to the corporate minimum in a very modest and restrained way. And further, when you go on to the broader tax discussions, please do so in a way that doesn't further hamper Oregon business. On that point, if I might, Mr. Chairman, my industry, residential construction, has been leveled in this state. We have essentially stopped. In the city of Salem, in the month of January, there were 5 building permits issued. We've met yesterday with the state treasurer and with the housing agency trying to get some legs under the federal stimulus package to monetize the tax credit in hopes of getting some of the inventory turned more quickly so people can start selling their homes, start buying new ones. But for right now, according to our calculations, we've lost over 20,000 jobs just in residential construction, and those are just in the companies that had employees. Most of my members are sole proprietorships, independent contractors. There's no way to track exactly how that has worked out in terms of job losses, and that number is simply the direct employment within the industry. That doesn't count the bankers, the realtors, the carpet manufacturers, the carpet dealers, the nail and stud and other suppliers. It has been a devastating blow to my industry. I have some numbers here from one of my larger builders, who I would just keep nameless if you don't mind, but he shared their information with me. 2005, Oregon sales of $173,400,000, employing 68 people within the corporation, their C corporation. 2006, $136,400,000. Still with the same 68 employees, but the loss of 30-some million dollars. 2007, $103 million in sales, now down to 60 employees. 2008, $37,600,000. So a drop of over $130 million down to 29 employees, and for 2009 they estimate $30 million in sales. So they have lost sales. Not just they, but Oregon has lost $140 million worth of transactions. They've lost, within this one company, over 40 employees who are all making family wage jobs, who are all had great benefits, and many of whom have not found other employment because nobody in the construction industry is hiring. This company filed Chapter 11 in June of 08. They're forced into a bankruptcy. They anticipate coming out of Chapter 11 this summer. But their balance sheet, the corporate balance sheet, dropped from a positive $78 million in 2007 to a minus $54 million this year. A corporate minimum tax on this company comes out of air. It comes out of photosynthesis. It doesn't come out of revenue. They don't have any. Please, when you impose a tax on business, recognize what you're doing. You're hampering that company's ability. Now, they might be able to pay it. I'm not saying they can or cannot. They're going to pay it at the expense of something else. And as I've told some of you, and I've mentioned this to your colleagues, if you're going to raise taxes, which you very likely will at least talk about, if not do, raise mine. Raise your own. Raise individuals. If you raise mine or Mr. Gallagher's or Mr. Marshall's, we will whine, we will complain, we will come in and yell at you in your offices, we will testify perhaps, and we may well pay our accountants money to get out from under the additional tax burden, but we will not fire anybody. I have no one to lay off. I will just grumble at you. My members will lay people off. Gallagher should pay a lot more.
I hope the camera's getting all of this.
I'm here to help, Mr. Chair, anyway. When Mr. Gallagher taxes under the bus, I am happy to do that. My point is, if you raise business taxes, you hamper the state's ability to recover from this recession. Period. consider that, please. I know you will, but I wanted to underscore it for you this morning. This is an important issue for all of us, as Oregonians and as business representatives. It is important enough to please pay attention to these bills as you look at them. I'll take questions, not except from Gallagher.
Thank you. Questions for this panel. Representative Bruhn, and then Representative Call.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chapman, does your analysis there that we're raising taxes on the C-Corps is damaging to Oregon coming out of this recession, but not so damaging on the individual side? Haven't we seen a substantial major shift from C-Corps to S-Corps, and aren't we in effect saying if we tax that as well, we're still taxing corporations?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bruhn, as was indicated, the shift over time has been from C-corporations to S-LLCs, LLPs, and whatnot. At least within my industry, most of the C-Corps that I'm aware of are inherited from prior days, from companies that have been passed down to their children. So they kept the same corporate form. I suspect, and that's something that would be interesting to have an analysis of, the higher you raise the C-corporation tax, you probably create an incentive to switch over the corporate form at some point into an S or an LLP. And I think it's also important to note that while it's difficult to tease these numbers out of the Department of Revenue, a big chunk of, I've heard as high as 10 or 12% of the personal income tax filing is, in fact, coming from pass-through business entities, LLPs, S-Corps, and others. So, yes, you're going to have more greater impact there.
I just want to put on the record, Mr. Chair, that if we're talking about not harming business by looking at personal income tax rates, we can't separate the two.
Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bruhn, Tom Gallagher answering the same question. Let me give an example of our business. When we put, my partner and I put our business together back in 2000, our legal advice was to incorporate as a C corporation. That was our lawyer's advice for liability issues and different ways of doing that. Our accountant's advice was, oh my God, what are you doing? We now calculate our end of the year. I spend quite a bit of time making sure that our books are and bills are paid and that we come out paying $10. And we do that basically through a bonus system with our employees because we're over 82% wages in our business because we don't do much. We're lobbyists. So what happens is all of our revenues that we have at the end of the year are distributed to all of our employees, and they're taxed at the personal income tax rate, and we pay $10. So I don't know, in terms of overall revenue to the state, what would happen to us. We'd simply go back and reincorporate as a partnership or an LLC, and we would do exactly the same thing we're doing right now. When the Department of Revenue runs the numbers, those numbers, all those tax dollars that are being paid by us sharing our revenues of our company with our employees are not calculated as business taxes. They're calculated as personal taxes.
Thank you. Representative Call?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Gentlemen, thank you for your testimony today. It's a perspective that maybe I don't get enough of, so I've really appreciated it. I do have a few questions.
Please, go ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Chandler, I guess what, for some of us up here, what our concern is the business example that you gave. You have a business that is doing quite well and then declining into pretty significant hard times. And my concern isn't that when they hit those hard times that we should tax them. I don't think anybody wants that. But I do think our system is set up in such a way that no matter how well that company is doing all the way down to hard times, they might have the same tax liability throughout that whole process. They might, can, pay $10 in taxes, no matter where they are in that spectrum of good times to bad. And I guess what we're trying to get at, or at least what I'm trying to get at, I don't want to speak for anybody else, but what I'm trying to get at is how do we ask that business during good times to try to contribute more to the state, more to the things that our state provides, so that we can grow and be a better place? That's what I want to understand. And I'm wondering if you can help me understand how we can get there.
Mr. Chairman, I was going to call to your specific question there. I can't speak to the tax liability of this particular example. I didn't ask them that question. They very likely wouldn't have told me. As I said in my testimony, if they paid $10, which, and again, I don't, for all I know, they paid hundreds of thousands of dollars of working income tax. But if they paid the $10, it's because they followed the law this body passed and is on the books. So the direct answer to your question is, if you don't like the outcome of the equation, change the equation. Don't do it through the second part, though, is don't do it with a corporate minimum, a form of alternative minimum tax. It's simply kind of a multiply by zero and add the correct answer as determined by this body. If you want to get at corporate activity of whatever sort, there's bills in front of you to allow that. That doesn't mean I'm going to agree to them or anybody else going to agree to them when they come in here scream and yell. I just think doing it through a corporate minimum approach is the wrong way to attack that the question you've raised.
Mr. Chair, then maybe I can raise a different question then, because
I think we have another panelist who'd like to respond to that one. So why don't we let him do that, and then you can raise your next point.
Chairman Barnhart, Representative Call, there are a myriad different forms of businesses all incorporated, operating differently, doing different things in the state. There's small business, medium business, large business. There are businesses that are located in this state only. There are businesses that are international businesses that do business here. It's a very complicated tax code. I'm going to go back to the fact that your total tax code for the companies that I represent, they hire a number of very skilled and professional people to sit down and figure out what their tax liability is. And over the 30 years I've been doing this, I've gone through central assessment debate, intangible property tax debates, sales tax debate, tax credit debates, rates issues. And those things are a constant, growing, living part of the Oregon law. I understand the concept of a business activity tax. I understand the concept of saying that if you do business in this state, you should pay something for the overall activity and impact you make on the state. Crafting that, as I've seen it in other states, is extremely complicated. It is a long time growing. The Washington B&O tax is a classic example. You have different businesses coming back in, talking about their business environment, their competitive environment, the way every other business activity or every other business tax has evolved in each and every different states. The tax systems of different states are different. Pulling one piece out of one state and applying it in this state is not a very fair way to do it. You have to take the total formula. The politics of each state are different. So what I'm going to come back and say is I think that it is reasonable for this committee to move forward on some sort of a basic business activity tax. The alternative minimum is a bumper sticker. The basis of an activity tax and how that activity tax interfaces with a profits tax or an excise tax, that is not something I think that we fully explored in any of the formulas that we've gone through. And so use another example of a company that started in this state that's a large big board company who right now is in heavy steel production. They are doing roughly 17% capacity in their operating plant. They just came back from a month in China looking at the Chinese steel production system under the Chinese system, which is all totally coal-fired. This company uses electric arc furnaces and natural gas. They're going to have to make a decision in a very relatively short period of time how much new capital they reinvest in those 375 jobs in a small town, of which they have now laid off over 100 employees, and that is a ripple through the economy of Minmill. Now, right now, you're going to need to raise revenue for your budget. You're going to need to figure out how you're going to get out of this budget hole from your side. This is not the time. It's not the time to get into these complicated debates. I agree with Senator Bergersville. You want to raise the corporate minimum bumper sticker and take it off the table. If you want to pursue the business activity tax, go ahead. You're going to have a large parade of different businesses coming in here laying out for you how that tax impacts their business differently. And that's a legitimate exercise for you to go through. You can't do that in the next 2 months.
Mr. Chair?
Please.
Thank you. Just to dig down then on a couple of the things that were said there. There was a lot said there. I guess, Mr. Gallagher, what part of my response would be, and I'd love to hear a comment on this, is that I'm just personally, and just to put this out there, I'm not interested in taking the $10 bumper minimum tax bumper sticker off the table. Because from my perspective, the way the system stands, and we hear numbers in here all the time, or we've heard numbers here and here in earlier testimony, that two-thirds of corporations in this state are paying $10. And some of those corporations are in the situation like Mr. Chandler's client is in. And if we're talking about creating a fairer system, that corporation paying $10 isn't fair. That corporation paying $1 isn't fair. And this idea that we would take it off the table by raising it at any point, to any level, for a corporation that actually is struggling, is barely on life support, that doesn't make sense to me. And so, as Mr. Chandler has said before, these concepts of how we define income and whether you qualify for the corporate minimum, those things are inextricably wedded together. Those conversations cannot be had separately, probably shouldn't be had separately. And if what we're trying to do is create a fair tax system, taking the corporate minimum off the table by raising it and forcing some of these corporations who have no money whatsoever to pay, that's not a solution I'm particularly willing to entertain. And I've said before in this committee quite often that the difficult task ahead of us is to balance the interests of simplicity and fairness within a tax system. And yes, the fairer the system, the more complex it is. But to me, taking a hot button issue off the table by making our system less fair while keeping a simplicity that is contributing to that unfairness really isn't reasonable. And I'd like to hear your comments on that. And maybe my thinking is completely wrong on this.
Mr. Chair, Representative Call, I think that your thinking is fine. I think you stated a way the problem is legitimately struggled with. And you hit a number of things in there, and let me try to walk through them. This concept of a corporate minimum to me is kind of a hard one. I mean, you just have to pay $10. What for? Harassment? What's going on? A business activity tax, a basic contribution to the economics of a state if you're doing business here. I mean, that has much more of a sensibility to it. The city of Portland has a business licensing fee, which they've been struggling with, and PBA members pay. It has an impact because it's a regional or local tax. People take that into consideration. They've gone through a number of different iterations as to how that tax is calculated on the different types of businesses. So I in one way, I wish there was a perfect truth here. A combination of fairness and taxation that raised the revenue necessary, and that if we should only stumble on it, we would solve the problem. I don't think that's true. Taxes to me are as much political as they are economic justice. You also talked about in the corporate minimum, we're talking about raising revenue. We need to raise this much money from the business community. Well, that's got nothing to do with the formula that you laid out about how you tax this business and that business. There are two ways corporations get to $10 in one sense, three ways. You lose money, bad deal for everybody. You do like my corporation does. You get to $10 simply by paying it all out to your employees. And I think there's a lot of small C-corps that do that. I don't know how many. The third way is use the rest of the tax system. Use a lot of tax credits. And I have heard in the earlier part of this debate one of the members of my association who is heavily invested in child care tax credits with his employees. He's a very progressive employer in downtown Portland. He uses other tax credits. He uses solar tax credits. He's gone through the tax credit and the policies that you've set, and he's calculated as to where he wants to put his money, into your pocket or into those programs that you supported. And I think when Mr. Chandler says go change the equation, if you're making money and you're getting to $10, then go back and look at those corporations. If you're an interstate corporation or an international corporation, and you're taxed on certain revenues here in Oregon. But some of those were passed for very good reasons, and they go back to the original statement that I think we many of us have lost sight of, is the way the revenue system functions best, the way this society functions best, is when people have jobs.
Mr. Chair, if I...
Please. I would note that I'd like to cut this panel a little bit short so that we have time for everyone else, but please go ahead and ask another question.
I've just got one very minor one. I'd just like to... I guess there are two things that have been said a couple of times now that I'd just like to get on the record. The sentence, "I don't know how many," what was said by Mr. Chandler and then by you, Mr. Gallagher, and that's also part of this problem, is that the way our tax system is set up, there just isn't a lot of information out there. I mean, a lot of this is us groping in the dark to figure out who's paying what and how much, how many corporations are in one of those three situations that you've described, and what that looks like, and how do we end up taxing them. And so I think we're going to need a bit more information potentially to actually, before we can even begin to solve the broader issue. And then to just try to put jobs has been referenced by all three of you, and I guess that the other side of that equation is that we are in the unenviable position of potentially exacerbating and elongating an economic recession by increasing taxation on businesses. That is true. But we are also in the unenviable position of exacerbating and elongating what is a dire economic recession by cutting our state budget. And on either side of those things, on either side of that equation, there are consequences to jobs and consequences to our economy. And I think what we're trying to do, at least what I'm trying to do, is figure out how we get that balance, how we can potentially gain new revenue and also make cuts without elongating, deepening, and exacerbating the situation that we're currently in. And I just wanted to thank you all for your comments and hope that we can work together to try to figure out what the adequate balance is there.
Mr. Chair, if I could, one final comment. You know, there's an old line that corporations don't pay taxes, people do. And I, Mr. Gallagher, who's much older than I, but mentioned the early recession
but he doesn't
in
look
the
it.
80s. And I couldn't help but think about those rural communities in Oregon, like Oak Ridge and Mill City and Elkton, where the folks there, they didn't give a rip if that corporation that had that mill in their town paid a dime. So they were more concerned not about what the corporation is as much as what it does. And so if we start to think about, so if a corporation doesn't pay a dime in Oregon taxes, who cares? The point ought to be what they do in terms of creating the jobs and the community. And it's not only the wages and the employees, but it's the multiplier effect of a viable employer in a community, whether they're a C-corp or an S-corp, and the value and the sense of community that creates. I mean, we've all heard about the impact on the social side of unemployment and the despair that goes along with that in terms of child abuse, spousal abuse, et cetera. So I think there's a lot to be said about a corporation for what it does as opposed to what it is. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And fortunately, we're out of time, which means that you and Mr. Gallagher will have to settle the question about age and other topics offline.
We'll do that in the hallway.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, next time could you invite me up with my good friend Chuck Shekatoff?
Thank you. Thank you very much. Valerie Rylands, Claire Morgan.
Good morning. Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, thank you for allowing us to speak today. My name is Val Rylands, and I live in Marcola, where my two children attend Marcola Elementary School. I've been an active member of Stand for Children for many years, and I'm very involved in our school district situation. Parents like me have done and continue to do everything humanly possible to give our kids a quality education. We're asking you to meet us halfway. Our school district is a small, rural school. We don't have any fluff, no buffer. Our families do everything we can, and we have no more resources to give a quality education to our kids. To make the books balance this school year, we're cutting a week of school. That's 4 days. Our teachers won't get paid. Our staff will not be paid.
I'm sorry, would you repeat which district that is?
Marcola.
Marcola, thank you.
Next year is going to be worse. We're cutting 20% of our staff. Our students will not have a quality education in our school district if nothing is done. Layoffs in Marcola will mean a loss of income to our, not only our teachers, but our small economy and our community. Our business will suffer. The school district is our largest employer. The small store in our school is not going to see the revenue. In fact, every job we save in public education means a better education for our students. In a 2002 Echo Northwest study, they found that every 10 educational jobs you save, save 9 jobs in the private sector because the money was went back into the local community. I'm here today to provide support for House Bill 2913 and House Bill 2070. Both of these provide vital revenue to the state and school districts like Marcola. While neither of these bills solve the funding problem for our schools and services completely, the potential money that could be generated could stave off personnel cuts, loss of school days, and help our children maintain at least a decent education. Currently, 95% of the state revenue comes from individuals like me through my personal income taxes, and the corporations pay 5%. The bills before you offer an equity, a level playing field. It would help us deeply. Both measures represent a good public policy that I think most Oregonians can support. To leave the corporate tax system in place would mean continued loss of funding and devastating cuts to our school district. I understand we can't wholly look to public corporations, large profitable corporations, to get us through the recession. They are one important piece in raising a billion or more dollars. These bills, combined with other revenue being discussed in the building, can make a significant difference to our kids. How do we build a strong economy and keep a strong economy when our education is continually underfunded? Once these cuts are made in my school district, we may never regain those positions back. I support the efforts of this committee to find additional funding for the state budget so education is not pitted in a dogfight for over scraps of money during the next economic downturn. Thanks.
Hi, good morning, Chair Barnhart and members of the committee. Thank you for this opportunity to speak to you today. My name is Claire Morgan, and I'm a retired educator from McKinney Elementary, which is in Hillsboro. I've been an active member of Stanford Children and chose to get involved because education is so important for our democracy, our society, and the future of our workforce. However, the funding is not there for our children. I have seen teachers using their own resources, their time and money, to buy extra supplies, their teaching tools, and other materials to foster a strong learning environment for our schools. We are asking you to share the responsibility of supporting our schools. Hillsboro is the fourth largest district in the state and has been fiscally responsible. Unfortunately, this has not left the district unharmed. The district implemented a budget freeze in light of the budget cuts. Field trips were called off, supply budgets drastically reduced. Ultimately, students were shortchanged. Next year, Hillsboro is facing an even larger deficit. Class size will likely increase, even if by just 2, which is 28-1, the district would lose 46 teachers. Measures such as cutting some classified staff, which is the playground aides, bus drivers, cafeteria cooks, etc., will add more duties to already overburdened teachers. Additionally, teacher and staff layoffs inevitably have a ripple effect on our local economy, and we've already been hit hard as a community with a massive layoffs in the high-tech industry. I am here today to voice my support for House Bill 2913 and a fair corporate minimum. This bill is a start to critical revenue reform in Oregon. For too long, we have relied on inadequate, unstable funding for our schools and other services and been asked to make do with less and less for our kids. I support House Bill 2913 and a fair corporate minimum because we need to share the responsibility of funding our schools. Right now, individuals contribute 82% and corporations just 5%. Oregon's taxes on businesses overall are the lowest in the 11 western states. These bills would restore adequacy. House Bill 2913 represents good policy. I am here today to represent the voices of parents, teachers, and community members in the Hillsborough area who voted for legislators who value our schools and our children's future. The time is now to show our support for our schools by adequately funding them. What signal does it send to our children when 17 days of school are cut, as we did in Hillsborough in 2003, or when we have to cut their favorite teacher, or the class they were hoping to take, or the field trip they were especially looking forward to? I support the efforts of this committee to find additional funding for the state budget, so education, along with other critical services, have a level of funding that adequately supports everyone. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions for this panel? I would like to note that Marcola is in my district. I'm very aware of the difficulties with small school districts. We face them all over the state. With small school districts and with the kind of problem. You're speaking, I think, typically for many, many of the small districts. And I would also like to note that I became involved in politics in 1993 when the Eugene School District laid off 100 teachers as a result of the budget cuts that came about because of Measure 5. Mm-hmm. I sympathize with the kind of problems that Hillsborough is facing mm-hmm. as well. I certainly understand from a personal, on a personal emotional level and also on a school quality level, what that means.
Yeah.
Thank you very
Thank
much
you.
For your testimony.
Thank you.
Ralph Groner, John Mullen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Ralph Groner with American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees. I will talk rapidly because I want to get through this so you can get to everyone. I'll make a few. One ask me supports revenue. Actually, we're looking forward with coalitions of at least $1 billion through a variety of functions, either revenue increases or holding back on tax expenditures. And by the way, I'd like to thank you for your work on House Bill 2607. I think it's about time the legislature stepped to the plate, and thank you for doing that. That's where you're listing.
Are you referring to 2067?
Yeah, did I get the wrong number? I'm older than you, Phil.
Yes.
Yeah, 2067.
2067.
Did I give you the wrong number?
I think you did, but
that's
I may have misheard,
That's beginning to
too.
Happen on my age.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Education, I'm going to hit these. I'm looking for balance, and balance I hope I show. One, education I care about. I started, as you did, Mr. Chair, on Clackamas Community College Board when we had one building, and I was on that board for 18 years. I'm concerned with what's happening to our community colleges today, but I'm also concerned as raising my granddaughter in a school district in Oregon City that, if you haven't read the headlines, just closed a favorite school and are going probably to four days of school a week, forcing those of us who can afford it to do some alternative education with my granddaughter. Public safety at the local level has asked me, and Oregon Youth Authority, probation, district attorneys, state police, everywhere we're threatened with the current crisis because we won't be able to get at fingerprinting to determine who's safe coming into the schools, or DNA to find out who was the rapist or the murderer. Those are my members who work on those issues. I'd also mention that seniors in this state, and by the way, without that public safety at that level, more end up in prison, costing you five times as much. Senior citizens without Project Independence, keeping folks out of nursing homes, will cost you four times as much. Mental health, we're now talking about going to a lower program, in my opinion, and do what we did with mental health 20, 30 years ago. Let's go to the private sector with low wages and no benefits and high turnover. OHSU, where I've lost as a union, right up to 1,000 members so far, meaning that we're not going to be capable to deal with the high, low-income citizens, that we were number one of all the hospitals in the state. And building and environment. I also represent the environmental agencies, particularly DEQ. And frankly, we're talking global warming and greenhouse gases. We're not going to be able to, under current funding or with future cuts, to be able to deal with that issue. Building inspectors that John talked about are my members in the cities, counties, and the state. All of them have been laid off at the state level, and we have lost our building inspectors who are fee-based statewide. I would only say when it comes to home building that we have stepped to the plate and support House Bill 2626. It will help the home builders. And I have also personally contacted my congressman and U.S. senator in terms of what to help with the mortgage industry. I hate to be disagreeable, but quite frankly, I served on the Revenue Committee here in 73 and 75. We did not view the corporate tax as just a fee you pay. Quite frankly, we were at 16% at that time, and you may say that was too high, and that's okay, but that's what it was, and we never looked at the corporate income tax as just a fee. Be that as it may, I would like to say in the end that I don't want to put an unfair burden on business. I'm not that naive. I feel that I've always favored helping business on a number of issues in this building that other unions haven't stepped to the plate on, and I'll just be quiet about water, et cetera, airports, et cetera, to increase the local taxes. But frankly, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, we're getting hit with Measure 50 at one end, and we're getting hit with the recession and income tax at the other end, and it's devastatingly worse than the early 80s. This recession is. So I don't want to be unfair to business, but I will say that we are the most dependent state for newcomers in America on one tax, the income. We're second in the highest to New York, but we're the most dependent. And the fact of the matter is that our personal income tax to at least our middle income and upper middle income folks who are paying their fair share of income taxes have become a hamper to them spending money to help stimulate the economy when the income tax is as high as it is on individuals. If we're going to talk balance, we need to talk about a corporation when they make money paying their fair share to step up to the plate and pay their fair share, similar to what OBOA, I have to compliment Ryan Deckard and in the Oregonian today, if you haven't had an opportunity to read it, in the business section, Ryan Deckard and the Oregon Business Association has recommended stepping to the plate. I forgot it was something like $170 million. I, of course, favor a higher amount of that to help us get to the $1 billion goal of the coalition. In the end, I would hope we look at balance, and the balance currently is like this. This is corporate, this is individual, and that is unfair. We need to look at balancing this out in a just and equitable way. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, John Mullen, co-chair of the Human Services Coalition of Oregon. I believe you're all familiar with the coalition. We've been around since the 1980s. There's about 80 of us individuals as well as organizations. And we've recognized for a long time now that the issues of human services and the concerns that we have need to be thought about in the light of the revenue that's available in the state. It seems rather obvious to say that. But we came up with principles long ago that were the same principles that the Revenue Restructuring Task Force came up with: fairness, adequacy, stability. So as we think about the things that we're doing, I was thinking about even this morning that I should be at the Senate Health Committee because there's a lot of important discussions going on there. But I think this committee has some of the most important discussions that go on in this building here and in Ways and Means. I would note that while none of you are on Ways and Means Human Services Subcommittee, you're aware of what is going on in your districts, the discussions that are going on at home about what's at stake here. And I think that's basically the focus of my presentation today, recognizing what's at stake and how we get to a sense of shared responsibility in the state. We have all along, the Human Services Coalition this time around, have been careful to talk about not only the human needs but the effects on the economy. When we think about what's going to be necessary to raise the resources so that we can get match for Medicaid, which brings in additional federal dollars, that has a direct result on jobs and the economy here in the state of Oregon. Our positions as the Human Services Coalition are evolving. We're trying to get a little bit more precise. We are talking about raising a significant amount of money. We recognize that that's going to need to come from personal income taxes as well as corporations and some, hopefully some changes in tax expenditures to be able to get us there. What that proper balance is going to be a matter of some discussion and debate all throughout this session. Our testimony today focuses on our support for 2913. Because we talk about corporations contributing in the same ways that families do, that's in the bill. And that's an important thing for us to think about and reflect on. The corporate minimum is also part of our testimony. And I would just end with a bit of a personal note. Even though I do my work down here every day, as all of you do, aside from this, I am also president of a small corporation. And I've said this before, and I'll underscore it again, is that I have paid the $10 minimum. I would be a fool to pay any more, but I am willing to pay more because I think of my corporation as well as the work that I do as being part of being a citizen of the state of Oregon. I'm willing to do my share. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions for this panel? Gentlemen, thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Jody Weiser, Marcia Kelly. And while they're coming up, is there anyone else who would like to be heard from this morning? I see some hands. We'll call you next.
Chair Barnhart, members of the committee, Jody Weiser with Tax Fairness Oregon. It's a relief to finally be again addressing taxation and any other positive steps we can take to address the shortfall that we all know is here. We must not ask that vulnerable members of our community and our children bear alone the damages of this economic crisis. Instead, we should expect shared responsibility with both wealthy and corporations stepping up to pick up at least $1 billion in increased revenue. I have here a bumper sticker. I paid more for this bumper sticker than most corporations pay in taxes. There's a billboard now out at the corner of Mission and 25th. That billboard shows a family that paid more in state taxes than any of the corporate minimum proposals before you today would create in debt to the state for a corporation doing business in the state. If businesses can afford to continue to pay their rent to their landlord, they can start paying some real rent to the state of Oregon. Today we're not talking about the personal share, we're talking about the corporate share, and we propose four specific ways that we could increase the corporate share in taxes. These are ways that are good from a policy perspective, and they are winnable with voters. House Bill 2070 is not before us today as a corporate minimum. We believe it should be. The step to single sales factor made employment in the state a moot issue for many corporations. And while it is true that all taxes are passed on to somebody, an employee, a shareholder, or a purchaser, we have many businesses in our state who have few shareholders in the state, and they have few sales in this state. And so much of any tax we burden them with would not be passed on to anyone that lives in this state. And so we should be looking at a way to tax businesses that includes the fact that they have people working here. We could raise the corporate minimum through 2070, which is the value-added tax approach to a corporate minimum, or we could go back to double-weighted sales and we'd get about the same amount of money. I think it would be simpler to go back to double-weighted sales, but that doesn't seem to be a popular idea. I think it would be very popular with other states, because many of them are being pushed very hard to go to single-weighted sales. And when we're all at single-weighted sales, we'll all be poor, but there will still be the same number of businesses to be passed around amongst the states. So we would be helping other states, not just ourselves, by making such a move. That you heard an example of a car dealership now making $29 million in gross revenue. With the tax proposals before you for corporate minimum, they would pay either $5,000 or $7,500. Well, if that amount of money on $20 million worth of gross would cause them to go out of business, let's remember the same number of cars will be purchased, whether that particular business is here or not. Because people are going to buy the number of cars they're going to buy. It's just how many dealerships will there be for them to buy it at. And if the purchasers go to a different dealership, then there'll be more employees at the other dealership than there were, because there'll be more purchasers there. So I think the threat of many of our businesses would leave because we've raised the corporate minimum is not honest. Walmart's not going to leave because they have to pay $25,000 when they're making millions here. And if Walmart did leave, other businesses would sell the products they currently sell, and we would get money from those businesses.
Mr. Chair, can I just for a second?
Representative Broome.
Yeah, thank you. I just want to make sure I understand clearly what you're saying, because I heard you say two different things, and maybe you meant both. One was, and it was the home builder, not the auto dealer, that was talking about their decreased sales.
Right.
But that's your point was, with a minimum tax of say, you said $5,000, if that business were to go out of business, that's okay, because there's other businesses that sell the same product to replace it. Then you talked about some other ones that talked about, hey, if the corporate minimum caused businesses to leave the state, that's okay as well. And I heard that part clearly. I just want to make sure I understand you clearly on the first part, which is the way I heard it, which is if the tax causes them to go out of business, which I mean as either going bankrupt or closing the door, locking the doors and saying see you later, you're okay with that?
If Home Depot decides that paying $5,000 or $7,000 or $25,000 to Oregon for its presence here is just not worth it, then Home Depot stops doing business in Oregon, and some other store picks up the business, because people are still going to buy plants and lawnmowers and paint and all the things they buy.
Sure. And the Home Depot is not really what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the company that's an Oregon company that may be a auto dealer, a used car dealer, a home manufacturer, as was talked about earlier. And I just want to, you know, I want to know from you if I'm hearing you correctly, which is, if that minimum tax, if it's $5,000 or whatever it is the straw that causes them to lock the doors and go home or file for bankruptcy, that's okay.
You know, if you're going to build houses here, you have to be here. If you're going to sell goods here, you have to be here. So all of those people are here because there are purchasers here. I mean, the state is providing the purchasers. And if it's the straw, and I'm sure Bed Bath & Beyond, which one of them, one of those stores went out of business, right?
Linens
went out of business. Well, people are still buying sheets. They're just not buying them at Linens and Things. They're buying them at Bed Bath & Beyond instead. And it really doesn't matter.
Unless you're an employee of one of the companies that actually closed
the lock. But the same amount of goods will be purchased, and so you will get a job at another place selling those kind of goods.
If it were a one-for-one, I'm sorry to remember this, Mr.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure it is, Joe.
I'm not sure it is, because it isn't right now, because people are buying less. But they would buy less from two stores, or they would buy less from one store. I mean, the downturn is the downturn. It's not about the taxes. And so I don't think that, I mean, we're the lowest tax state of the 11 Western states, and we have the highest unemployment rate. The formula, I mean, if you look at that, the formula is not working. We need to raise our taxes so we can have fewer people unemployed. That's kind of what we're being told, is that, you know, this low tax rate is good for business. Well, it's not working for us. Something's not working for us, and I don't think we should keep saying that this is super important. I think the most significant thing that we can do today is the legislation that's in 2913. It will win at the ballot box. Raising the tax on every LLC and LLP won't, in all likelihood. It'll raise as much money as an honest look at Obis plan from yesterday would raise. Only it would raise it in 2 years, but Obis plan would raise in 3 years. It's simple. Everybody pays the same rate, whether you're doing business as a corporation or as an LLC or as an individual. And you only pay tax if you have something to pay tax on, a salary or the profit of a business. So I think it's a simple concept, and it raises a significant hunk of money. I don't think it's the only thing we should do. I think addressing the corporate minimum with a value-added tax is a good idea. But we should at least do that. And finally, we need to decrease corporate tax expenditures. The work you guys are doing with the Betsy is a good piece of that kind of thing, and we need to look more deeply. We passed by a lot of options earlier, and we need to go back and consider some of those, because as you were told, people are paying $10. Corporations are paying $10 because they're following the law, and the law gives a lot of money away in tax credits and tax expenditures, and we need to look and see if those are the right priorities for these days. And finally, we need to permanently put the corporate kicker into the rainy day fund. That's not before you today, but it will be in another week or month for sure. To expect less than an additional $300 million from corporations is plainly not asking these business partners to do their fair share. Long before the current crisis, the need to increase the corporate share was evident. Their share has dropped from 16% in the 70s to 6% of income tax collections, while our support for university education, for health care, for senior services have all dropped below acceptable levels before we were in an economic crisis. The current crisis only exacerbates the inequities that businesses' small contribution makes. Now's the time to address this, not in a temporary fashion, but on a permanent basis. From OBA and the National Federation and others, you will hear ideas put forward that will provide a small contribution, mostly temporary. That simply isn't adequate. When the rest of us put $50 on the table, corporations currently contribute $4. The other proposals we're seeing change that from $50 from us and $4.50 or $5 from them. Corporations today rely upon the same services they used in the 70s, and they need to return to paying their fair share, particularly in these days when the community is calling for shared sacrifice. The proposals we suggest would change it to where when everybody else puts $50 on the table, corporations' share would be on the order of $7. We need your leadership. We need you not to be following what the business community says they're willing to do, but what you know the state needs for you to do. They've tried to convince you that their primary responsibility is to provide jobs, and that their use of the tax system, the transportation structure, and everything else is just tertiary. Well, given that kind of thinking, let's think of it this way. Families' primary responsibility is to provide workers, so we shouldn't pay any taxes either.
Thank you very much. Please.
Chair Barnhart and members of the committee, my name is Marcia Kelly, and I'm here today for both the Oregon Women's Rights Coalition and the American Association of University Women of Oregon, because in the past I've worn both of those hats too, and AUW is on its way to the convention in Bend this weekend, so I'm going to speak for both of those. In 2001, I started appearing in the halls here. And one of my first appearances was in the Revenue Committee, and except for this session, I've been here for all of the introductory about where the money comes from, where the money goes. The first time I came into the room, Jim Craven, a friend that I sat on a public board with in Salem in past, said, "Marcia, what are you doing here? You're lobbying for the Women's Rights Coalition. This is money." And I said, "Money is important to everyone, and we can't have programs unless we have money. So I'm coming to the Revenue Committee." Fast forward to 2009. We're here to talk about fairness in how we provide services to people and fairness how we tax people to provide some of those services and to provide for the common good that Oregon has. I spend a lot of time working on the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families program, which helps families who have to be 50% or less of the federal poverty level to get those services. They're called the self-sufficiency services, and right now, at a 30% cut, the majority of their program money would go away. They are scheduled to have $168 million of the general fund cut that the Children, Adult, and Family Services division has. So I'm worried about those people who are struggling to get their lives together so they can become taxpayers in Oregon. And we need to figure out ways that we can help the lower and middle income people who are paying taxes in Oregon survive. And putting an additional surcharge on lower and middle income people, I don't think is going to do the case. We need to talk about the corporate share, the corporate fair share. I was around in the middle 70s when the corporate share was 16%, and it's now 6%. So I don't think that a proposal that I heard earlier this morning about putting a surcharge on corporate taxes is going to generate the same amount of taxes as it did in the 1981 downturn. It doesn't make sense because they're not paying it. And at the same time they're saying, "Don't raise our taxes because we aren't making any money," they're saying, "Surcharge our taxes." It's a good soundbite to say surcharge the corporate taxes, but at the same time, should you be saying, "But we're not making anything, so you can't tax us." A little bit of an inconsistency there. Oregon is not an unfriendly state for businesses. The Tax Foundation, not a liberal think tank, ranks Oregon 10th in business tax climate in 2009. It's a combination of corporate taxation, individual taxation, sales tax. That's probably where we get some of our ranking. Unemployment rates, unemployment insurance rates, and property taxes based on commercial and individual taxes. So at this point in time, we're very friendly. Maybe we need to get not so friendly and be able to help other people in the state by taxing corporations a bit. Well, would the corporations run away to another state? Washington is ranked 12th, Idaho is ranked 29th, California is ranked 48th, and Nevada is ranked 3rd. And I'll tell you something, I don't think I would be, if I was a corporation exchange, the ability to go to the mountains, to the desert, to the ocean, and the lovely valleys where you have great wineries, to move to Nevada. Thank you. I visited there, and I don't think I want to live there. I don't think some of the corporations here want to do that either. We need to look at fairness. The proposal N 2913 is a good proposal. If I were sitting on the dais, I would remove the 12/31/2012, because I think that we need to start doing the ratchet up where corporations are paying fair taxes in this state.
Thank you very much. Oh, you're not finished.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you very much. Are there questions for this panel? I would note just one very unusual error, I believe, in Jody Weiser's testimony, and that was when you talked about the taxes will be paid by somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's another category, and that's the taxes, and you certainly implied it in other parts of your testimony, and that is taxes that aren't paid, and therefore people suffer because there are cuts in services. And, of course, for us, it occurred to me as the two of you were talking, something that I had not really put in words before, and I'd like to say it out loud so I don't forget it, and that is that it is always of the interest of an individual taxpayer who is concerned about that taxpayer's personal or business finances to put off the taxes on someone else. The old saying, of course, is don't tax me, don't tax thee, tax the man behind the tree, is absolutely true, and it applies to businesses as much as it does to anyone else. It is our task on this committee and in the legislature to figure out what the optimum approach to taxation is so that we actually provide the level of service that Oregonians need, not only because Oregonians need them personally, but also because they provide a positive business climate within which businesses can operate. I think it's very clear that businesses will, all else being equal, just as individuals do, will resist paying taxes if they can get away with it, in the hopes that someone else will pay the amount that is necessary to provide the climate within which business can flourish. Our task is to make sure that we find the balance, whatever that is. And I don't prejudge that issue. I simply note that that's a reality of human nature. The fact that someone opposes an increase in taxes on themselves ought not to surprise us very much in most cases. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yes, we'd like to respond. Please.
I would like to respond because there is a proposal in the OBA to increase the filing fee for the corporations.
Yes.
And having been a small business owner, that would also really affect small business as well as nonprofits. And proportionally, it would be more of a cost for small businesses and the nonprofits. And so that's sort of not a big corporate tax, so I don't think you ought to consider that part of the corporate tax structure that's paying their fair share, because basically I think a majority of those filings are small business and not big corporations. And small businesses most likely already pay 9%.
Thank you. I appreciate that testimony. I have been loudly saying very similar things, that some of these proposals that look like fair proposals because they're sort of across the board have big effects on very small businesses and no effects at all on larger businesses that actually use more services and probably in fairness ought to pay a higher tax. I appreciate your reminding us of that point.
It looked to me, in analyzing the OBA proposal, that Intel would probably pay $290 more, and our nonprofit would pay $50 more with that proposal. It didn't really seem like it was a significant step in the right direction.
Well, but we, on the other hand, we have to acknowledge that it's a very wonderful to see a business organization come forward with a very substantial tax increase proposal. Whatever the details are, we can work those out. But the idea that they believe that businesses ought to pay substantially more in taxes than they do now is a very welcome proposal. Thank you very much. Oh, yes, Representative Springer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess more of a comment than a question. I think it's important, whether we're talking $10, $300, $5,000, that's really not the point. But as we talk about the value of a business in a community, I don't have Bed Bath & Beyond. I don't have any Home Depots. I do have a Walmart. I have smaller businesses that are employing maybe 50 people They were employing more than 100 people. They're not now. And I don't, I struggle with the analogy in my district that if they can't buy the towel here, they'll buy it someplace else. But so many of the businesses in my rural communities are much more than just selling towels or lumber. They're investing in the community. They're helping build the stadiums. And so the idea that it would be okay if they disappeared, they can buy that stuff someplace else, I struggle with that a little bit because these businesses are contributing into the communities, and a lot of them are providing the viability of the community. I'm thinking of some of my towns that are 1,000 people or less. They shut the doors and leave. The town does too. And I've seen that in the community that I live in many, many, many years ago. So I think we need to be careful. It's not just about where we purchase the towel or the board or the whatever.
You know, I think that the whole thing of these massive stores has been a disaster for small communities. I grew up in a small community, and we bought everything in town. And then Kmart came, and that was really the only place you could buy anything in town. And then Kmart left, and now you drive 100 miles to buy something. And the big merchandisers really have been very hard on our society, I think. And you're right; they don't contribute the scholarships to the local high school or help put the park bench in the park on a personal basis like small business owners do.
Follow up, please. I just need a point of clarification.
Please, thank you. Yes,
I didn't say they don't. I didn't say anything that big businesses don't do anything. I want to focus on, and I'm fine with those, and I got to tell you, Walmart's parking lot in Lebanon's full all the time. Saturday I don't go because I can't find a parking space. So people are using it. They're happy it's there. So it's not about them. It's about keeping our smaller businesses viable in our smaller communities.
Thank you very much for that comment.
And I would just like, Chair Barnhart, Representative Springer, I'd also like to point out that part of the thing that keeps a community stable, and especially in the rural communities, is stability with public services and the school teachers and the people who work with the kids at Head Start. And those dollars, as Paul Werner would point out, public dollars, public salary dollars and private sector dollars spend the same way. You don't have a separate cash register.
Thank you very much. We appreciate your testimony. We have three more people signed up that were signed up when I wasn't aware. Christine and Tatiana, and I'm sorry, I can't read the last names, but you know who you are, so please come forward. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, committee members, for the record, my name is Christine Chen Ryan. I'm a small business owner since 1988 here in Oregon. And we actually are going to address all the bills. And so even though we wrote down on just the last one.
And we submitted one set of testimonies,
yes,
for both.
To address all the bills here that are being discussed. You want to introduce yourself?
My name is Tatiana Lifshitz, and I am a member of the Executive Committee of the Oregon Small Business for Responsible Leadership, on whose behalf we will be testifying today. And I have been a small business owner of a number of businesses here in the state, and although I live here for about 30 years, I also spend about a half of my time abroad in Europe. I actually specialize in international law and diplomacy, and particularly in finance and intergovernmental relations worldwide, and have a significant amount of experience with similar issues in many other countries. And that's why I offer this explanation, because I'd like to make some comments about that experience.
Thank you. Please, go ahead.
Okay. First of all, I'd like to say for years, small business owners have admitted and agreed $10 minimum is, too little. The corporate minimum was created to process tax filings, and now it's evolved to encompass funding for a variety of programs related to filings and business services. So the role of the original $10, and back then $10 was a lot, and there was fewer types of corporations or entities. We do believe in shared responsibility. We think Oregon should shoulder, all businesses in Oregon should shoulder the cost of participation in the Oregon economy equitably, and believe that the corporate minimum structure should not be dictated by a revenue shortfall to be collected now to bridge state budget deficits. Rather, the modification of this tax should be based on fairness to businesses, including small businesses. We're going to be focused on small businesses since that's what our advocacy has been. We feel revision of the corporate minimum tax is necessary because it is antiquated and does not reflect the modern times of business, not because, as many say, the Oregon economy is in crisis. It's just things have changed. House Bill 2913, the increased rate would almost a third in light of the current economic climate. So we all the bills we disagree on, for the record. House Bill 2119 applies only to C-Corps, put the burdens on small businesses. It goes up too fast in the gross revenues bracket and stops before getting the big businesses to pay their fair share. House Bill 3049 mostly taxes small businesses. Big businesses are not paying their fair share proportionately to general gross revenues or the size of the business impact on the Oregon economy. Not fair to small businesses. Although the bill is not clear, we assume it applies only to S-Corps and C-Corps because it says a corporate minimum, and both C-Corps and S-Corps have a $10 minimum. So, but we weren't sure because most of them are usually at C-Corps. House Bill 3405 puts the burden on small businesses and, again, goes up too fast in the gross revenue brackets. We also looked at the OBA's proposal that they sent out yesterday, and we feel that it's even worse because you're adding additional personal income tax by 1% and also the corporate minimum. We want to bring back to what we proposed to you on 2070. We think it is fair and equitable for small businesses as well as large, and we looked at it as being fair and as a long-term perspective. So we proposed it again to have you take a look at it again. We did make one change. The recommendations are to file a form 1120-1120S or 1065 versus, say, an LLCs and sole proprietorship and so on.
Could you repeat those numbers? The numbers you just gave, would you repeat those form numbers?
It's in the
1120S and 1065.
Thank you.
And it is in our written.
What that would do, it would cast the broad net, but it would also not harm those many of those LLCs that are basically pass-through entities that don't really generate any income.
If you put in a corporate minimum and then the excise tax, you're hitting the businesses, especially small businesses, twice. And we don't think that's fair. And we feel that also, even though this is only based on the corporate excise and the corporate minimum, we, as a small business group, are looking at other types of programs and, for example, healthcare, with what they're proposing on the provider tax, will do a pass-through and increase premiums, which will affect small businesses. So everybody's really pushing at businesses right now, and so we're looking at what's equitable, what's fair for small businesses. We also feel that the way that the bills are, with looking at the $500 to $3 million, $1 million, $2 million, $3 million are not large businesses. They're small businesses. I'm a C corp. I'm a small business owner. In my industry, most of my business is a C corp. And so the range between $500,000 and $3 million, I guess because most of the C corps are in that bracket and most of them pay $10, and I've had paying $10 when I've had losses. So that's where that I think where the revenues need to be raised. And you shouldn't be thinking that way, because there's a reason why they pay $10. They are small businesses. They are showing a loss. And it's not to just take those numbers, because that's the majority of the C-Corps, and that's where, we should pay $1,000 or $1,500 minimum. That's because that's a very big impact to small businesses.
Would you like to? Perhaps I'll take it up from here. I speak 9 languages, and in talking to people and businesses around the world, basically I have discovered that most of us are interested in the same common needs and goals. And most businesses around the world, small and large, are actually quite willing to pay a fair share and participate in their communities. And here, being involved in small business advocacy, we've discovered very much the same trend. And the key is fair and across the board. And we want to offer that, in part the economic crisis where we are now is in part because the corporate taxation is way out of whack in many respects. And I suggest that you're going to hear many of these cry wolf stories that businesses are going to close and go bankrupt and jobs will be lost because of some adjustments in corporate minimum tax. But I would dare to suggest that most of those fears would not materialize. In the majority of Benelux countries, and actually those third world countries that are more developed, a similar tax exists that is basically called a business existence tax. And surprisingly, the overwhelming experience shows that rather than taxing profits or net income, it has been a lot more effective to tax gross revenue straight across properly defined gross revenue brackets that correspond to and reflect the sizes of businesses and their economic footprint in that community or in that country. Furthermore, taxing straight across on gross revenues has actually encouraged most businesses in those countries to run a leaner operation. That actually results either in more benefits to their employees, more jobs, or a higher bottom line profit that they are taxed on in other ways. That has been the overwhelming result. This morning I sat here and listened to a great number of appeals and some heartbreaking stories. And we really wonder if we need to go that far and delve so deeply into evaluation of all the different impacts that might or might not be. I mean, of course, the OSBRL does not think that we should be putting anybody out of business because of a horrendously high corporate minimum tax. but we also don't think that it's necessary to go out on the limb and pursue an unpopular policy or law that would actually fire back and create more problems. We have studied the corporate minimum tax history, and actually discovered that the very intent of this tax to begin with was to cover tax and other filings expenses that the state had experienced, incurred. Now, this tax was first originated about a century ago.
We are aware of that history,
okay.
And I have two other people I'd like to
okay.
hear from, so if you could wrap up, that would be very helpful.
All right.
Thank you. So
we have calculated that in proportion in proportion to $10, versus the total average income that the entities experienced at that time when this tax was enacted, represented a small percentage. And so, in accordance with that, we devised a step-by-step bracket approach that you can see in. On the last two pages of our proposal, that is fair to small businesses and large businesses and offers protections to both types of businesses and to both sectors of the economy, while raising a very substantial portion of revenue or number of revenue that would accurately reflect the footprint of the various sized businesses and would not require to engage in so many controversial discussions that really threaten the good intention of having a corporate minimum tax structure updated to the times of economic modernity.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Are there any burning questions, or can I ask the last two witnesses to come forward? Roger Martin, Marion Haynes. Yes, please. We have only a few minutes. I'm going to ask people to be extremely brief.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I will try to be very brief. I represent three corporations, Alaska Airlines, which also owns Horizon Airlines, Union Pacific Railroad, and the Williams Corporation, all of whom do business in the state. Two of them would never move, no matter what you did. Union Pacific Railroad's got too much invested in line, and so does the Williams Pipeline Company. The airlines, however, are something different. I'd like to just briefly talk about it. I've heard the slogan, this sign costs more than most corporations pay in taxes. We don't pay. The airlines are all losing money. I don't have to tell you that. We don't pay corporate taxes, but let me tell you that we do. Alaska and Horizon have over 2,000 employees and very highly paid jobs that are residents of the state of Oregon, and they all pay income tax. We also pay a very high property tax administered by the Oregon Department of Revenue. We pay a jet fuel tax that is the basis for the funding of the Oregon Department of Aviation, even though that department does very little for commercial airlines, but that's how they're funded. We also pay the lion's share of improvements in places like PDX and other airports, because that's how they build extensions and they build their terminals. The airlines are very mobile. We're in a competitive situation. PDX has worked very hard to try to get and keep airlines flying in and out of Portland. And we all expect that you're going to raise the minimum. We're just asking to realize that a extreme increase in the minimum is going to affect the airlines. I do not have the authority or permission. I'm saying this personally, just from my experience. But you're going to find Delta Airlines and other airlines that serve PDX, if the tax is extremely high, deferring to fly out of places like Denver, Salt Lake, Seattle, and San Francisco, because the airlines are shifting their bases. The larger planes with longer-range engines allow people to fly internationally out of Denver rather than run off the Oregon coast. It will have an effect, and I hope you do keep that in mind as you work on it. One of the earlier iterations, and Chair Barnhart exchanged this with the corporate people in Seattle with Alaska, when we ran the figures, showed us instead of paying a minimum, we would pay somewhere close to $350,000 as a minimum tax, even though we lost money. I don't think you're still considering that, but please keep that in mind as you consider the level of the minimum tax. We expect a tax. I join my business colleagues, don't make it a major revenue because you will affect some businesses like airlines.
Thank you very much. Please.
Marion Haynes with the Oregon Business Association. We've heard a lot about our plan this morning, so I figured I better walk you all through it. We took a look at this within, we created an economic crisis task force when we had heard in early February what the predictions were for the May revenue forecast. So when we talk about the corporate minimum, we really looked at it within the context of the overall budget situation and how we would comprehensively deal with that. We first developed a set of economic principles. You can read those in front of you, but like many of the other businesses that we've heard from, we really focused on, you know, the need for continued job creation and recognizing that that's what's going to pull us out of this. At the same time, we do recognize that we have a role to play in this. We're in a historic budget crisis, and we all need to own a piece of trying to get us out of this. The shared sacrifice we've heard about so much. We recognize there will be cuts. We also recognize that there will be revenue increases. We did not particularly like a lot of the corporate minimum proposals that we had seen, and so we actually tried to work within the framework of one of those and see if we could come up with what we thought was a better model. You'll see on the sheet about the budget shortfall that we essentially put together what OBA could agree to as far as a corporate contribution to this overall situation. Some of that is supporting the use of the kicker that was seeded by businesses last fall when they voluntarily gave up their kicker. We also have a temporary surcharge on the corporate tax rate. There was a significant contribution from business when this body decided to disconnect from the federal tax code. We have proposed doubling the corporate filing fee and also the corporate minimum. On the back, you can see how we restructured that. We tried to level out the bottom of that so that it wouldn't impact small businesses too hard. We did agree with the small business folks that getting up to $5,000 when you're making $1 million in gross sales in the state is that's pretty hard on small businesses. So we tried to level out that low end and recognize that some of the larger corporations should be paying more. This is not to say that this is not going to be painful. We stretched. The concerns that you heard from others about businesses that simply aren't making any money right now are real. We also, as you can see, added a flat rate of $250 to S-Corps, LLPs, partnerships, and those filing 1065s so that you avoid those LLCs that are just there for liability purposes. One interesting thing I'd like to note is this is, again, what we can live with as far as an overall corporate contribution. This represents about at least a 33% increase in corporate taxes at a time when we know what's going on in the business environment. So this is nothing to shake your head at. I mean, this is a significant increase that we're bringing to the table here, a good portion of which is ongoing. I also want to address briefly just the notion of this that corporations are paying less and less of a share of the overall tax burden since the 70s. A lot of these corporate entities, LLCs, things like that, did not exist in the 1970s. They weren't an option. So corporations are still paying a significant amount of money. It's just showing up on the individual side of the ledger. If you ran the numbers on the $300 proposal just for C-Corps, it gets you to about $14 million. The flat rate that we proposed at 250, which is actually lower than that, raises about $57 million. And so that gives you an idea of the scale and the numbers of businesses that are now in entities like LLCs, S-Corps, and things like that that aren't showing up on the corporate side of the ledger. So I think it's a little bit hidden in there, but I don't think that the corporate contribution has significantly decreased over time. You just don't see it in the same spot anymore.
Thank you very much. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is John Powell, before you, representing AT&T. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we participated in the earlier discussions of the corporate minimum tax that was hosted by the leadership on both sides and facilitated by Mr. Warner. And frankly, all of my clients, regardless almost of any kind of minimum tax you put on, would not be affected by it because they all pay taxes and at a fairly heavy rate. AT&T did call me and ask me to get into this fray, primarily because 2913 was one of the bills listed. And if, in fact, the corporate rates are going to go up an index, they want to be very much a part of that debate. They're not going to go anywhere. They're not going to threaten anything. Any kind of corporation that has heavy investments in their infrastructure, like telecommunications, obviously care about the tax rates their growth would be subject to, and that has something to do with where they invest their money. And they like Oregon, they like being here, and they like working here, and they like being a good corporate citizen here.
Thank you. I appreciate the testimony today. I want to tell you we're out of time. I had a little difficulty managing the witness schedule today. I'm not certain exactly what happened, but I didn't know about the last four witnesses until very last five or six witnesses, actually, until very late in the hearing. So those of you who appear here regularly might find it useful to sign up early. It gives me a better chance of managing the time and giving those at the end a more fair proportion of it, and I appreciate it. And I know we have at least one person who would like to speak, and they did not yet heard today, and I apologize for that. I always try to endeavor to apportion the time so that we get everybody heard, and I apologize for the fact that we were unable to do that today. And with that, we will close the public hearing and adjourn the committee.